Save the whales and dolphins. welcome everyone to another episode, a fascinating one, I might say, of The Peaceful Planet. This is your host, Marcia McMahon, and we are so pleased to have a wonderful guest with us today, Ann Andrews, who has written a very fascinating book titled Walking Between Worlds. And she deals with strange occurrences that have occurred to herself and her family that are based on truth, relating to the possibility of, are there aliens and are they real? So it's going to be a great show, but we have quite a few announcements coming up and some channeled messages before we get to Anne. And I want to mention and give credit to our song as well. You were listening to The Radical Dolphin, which was originally written by Robert Murray, and the lyrics were written by myself, and it's a rendition of the songs that are being channeled in from spirit from none other than the great ex-Beatles John Lennon and George Harrison. And this one was written by John. Radical Dolphin is a song about the ascension and the dolphins, and I hope you enjoyed the song. So today I want to bring to your attention a very important tour that I'm going to be co-leading with Body Mind Spirit Journeys. This is coming up in February, and we're going to be visiting Greece, and it's titled Greece, A Spiritual Odyssey, Connect to the Gods and Goddess Within. And I want to read to you just a little bit about this. You can reference this on bodymindspiritjourneys.com, and then you would go to Sacred Journeys and then click on Greece. But it is also posted on our show page, along with the information I have about our guest today, Ann Andrews, and you can click on it right from the BBS show page about this program. So this is a sacred journey, and it will not be offered again at this special low price. The group is open to a maximum of 15 people. The tour is billing. Registration closes January 19th. The dates for departure are February 17th through 24th, 2008. We're going in off-season. We're getting wonderful rates. You will have a full week of all the ancient sites in ancient Greece and explore the heart of Western civilization, the great legacy of the Greek civilization, and connect with the powerful energies of the archetypes of the gods and goddesses that are there in and among the energies of the ruins. We'll be going to ancient Delphi. There will be meditations. We'll be going to the Acropolis. As many of you know, I'm an art history professor, and this is what I specialize in. So I will be bringing in all the information that I have about ancient Greece. So please feel free to join us, and you may also email me if you wish to be added to the update list at M-A-R-C-I-A-D-I, marciadi@charter.net. If you want further information, you can email me there. So I wanted to bring that to your attention, and I also want to ask all of our listeners and light workers to meditate this week particularly. It's very important this week to be thinking about peace for the Middle East, because a very important meeting is coming up in America, in Annapolis. All the countries, the Arab countries of the Middle East, including Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas and Israeli Prime Minister Olmert, will be coming to the peace table. This is an unprecedented opportunity to iron out differences between these two countries or situations. The country of Palestine has not been formed. It's a territory. And as you know, has been a sore spot there in the Middle East, along with many other areas. And while we cannot possibly do this work and send healing light without the aid of the angels, the angel that I work with is Princess Diana, and she's been on this very issue for more than 7 years with me, and I do a weekly angel messages list. Now I've turned it into a newsletter that's offered monthly. So if you'd like to be on the newsletter, please send me an email to marciadi@charter.net, and you will get the angel messages as well. I include other works from Archangel Michael, etc. But I wanted to read this message very briefly from Diana, and I would like you all to meditate and pray for peace this week, and particularly send light to those representatives of various countries, because there's a lot at stake here for the children of the Middle East and for America as well. Princess Diana has revealed to me in her messages from Beyond the Veil that if we can solve this one issue of helping Israel and Palestine, or Palestine to coexist with Israel, that we will have a lasting world peace, and we want this very much for the New Age. If you're interested in my book, by the way, it's available on my website at Diana Speaks to the World. So very briefly, I'd like to just touch on some of her message here, and this is an excerpt. I must say that all sides will have issues to overcome. At the base is the issue of terrorism, such a pervasive evil of our day. They must also concede that democracy in the Middle East is a positive step in the right direction and try not to hang on to monarchy, oil, and the repression of women. We hope the Saudis can be open, but they have much to lose with these issues. So much more is at stake here, as a new world is about to dawn, as well the touchy issue of Iraq, Syria, and now Lebanon. First things first, Iraq must be vacated and the war ended to please the other Arab states. And as part of that agreement, that will need to happen. Syria must stop its direct fueling of Lebanon's terrorism. And as well, Iran must be contained in her nuclear ambition. All the Arab countries must come to terms with Islamic terrorism and denounce it. Hamas in Gaza must be dealt with, and if this succeeds, the people will automatically reject their power hold in Gaza. Lebanon must help to stand out on her own two feet. All of these issues must be solved if the meeting is to succeed, so that you see not just the Palestinian state is at risk here, but the entire Arab Middle East must be transformed from a place of despair and bloodshed and oppression to a liberated, free democracy of peace and Islamic moderation. I have said my piece. I thank you for listening to me. I am ever Princess of Peace, Diana. So what a lovely message, and how ardently she's been working on that one issue of peace in the Middle East with me. If you'd like to look at the book or read excerpts, it's titled With Love from Diana, Queen of Hearts, also available and on sale at Amazon. So anyway, those were my announcements for today. Thank you for listening to them. And now I would like to read the bio of our special guest, Ann Andrews, who has written a fascinating book titled Walking Between Worlds, Belonging to None. And I want to read to you her bio. Ann Andrews was born in South London and had a poor but happy upbringing. Her mother was a middle-class housewife, and she received her great love of nature and animals from her Romani father. At age 12, they moved to the country, where she subsequently met her husband, Paul, of 29 years. They have two sons, Daniel and Jason. It was after Jason was born that another well-hidden part of their lives came to light, that Jason and Anne are alien abductees. From that time, the whole family was plagued by strange paranormal experiences. It took 12 years to finally accept the possibility of alien interaction in their lives after searching for any other explanation. So I'd like to welcome you to the Peaceful Planet, and I'm delighted to have you on. Your book was a riveting read.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be on.
Yes, and I appreciate your patience with my announcements as well. And I just want to say that, you know, this kind of thing is not something I normally cover on the Peaceful Planet. I tend more toward other psychics and other kinds of things, but this entire month we have had a theme, and that being the possibility of aliens among us here on planet Earth. And somehow I let Spirit guide me, and Spirit guided me rightly to you and your book, and I found it, I was unable to put it down, and I feel that you are coming from a place of great honesty, and you have a very important message, and I want to commend you for bringing that out.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Now, I wonder if you could kind of go back in time and recant a little bit of your first memories. I remember the thing that struck me the most about your book, and we're going to get into as many of these experiences as we can, and then try to cover the overall purpose to them. But when Jason was very young, there was a severe thunderstorm, and there was some odd goings on way back then. And Jason is your younger son, who sort of feels that he has had many of these terrible abduction experiences, and they were terrifying to him. But what happened with that first lightning strike, thunderstorm? What was that all about?
Right, yes, Marcia. That would have been his fourth birthday party.
Okay.
It was his first birthday party that he'd ever had. It was basically at the end of the party, all the children had gone home, and my mother was there helping us, and we decided to, you know, to finish cleaning up. We sat down at about 10 o'clock in the evening, you know, with a cup of tea just to get over the events of the day. And it was, Jason was actually asleep on the sofa beside my mother. Daniel was upstairs in his bed. And my mother commented that, you know, it looked like there was going to be a lot of rain, that there was a thunderstorm coming. And whilst we were just sitting there, the rain began. And then it sounded as if somebody was knocking on the door. Very heavy, very insistent. So, of course, you know, we all looked at each other, obviously not expecting anybody that sort of time of night.
No.
My husband went to answer the door, and as soon as he opened the door, you know, there was nobody there. He looked up and down the lane. There was nothing. So he closed the door again. And before he could come back and sit down, there was a horrendous sort of bolt of lightning, which was so fierce in its brightness, you know, it seemed to light up the whole of the house. And that brought our other son, Daniel, downstairs. But it also, it made Jason sit up. It was almost like he was in like a robot fashion. He sat up on the settee, and then he started coming out with fantastic numbers. It was almost, if you can imagine it, a four-year-old coming out with all these binary codes, you know, all these mathematical problem numbers.
Einstein's theory, in other words. He was reciting all these very advanced math expressions?
Yes, he was,
uh-huh.
Which was
really odd.
Obviously, you know, fantastic in itself. But as I say, his eyes were wide open, but, you know, he was obviously oblivious to everything around him.
Did it seem as though he was in kind of a... Was he in kind of a trance?
Yes, I would have said so, almost. As I say, he just sort of didn't, his eyes didn't blink at all. He just sat sort of like stiff-backed and just started pouring out these numbers. And then the knocking on the door seemed to sort of, you know, began again.
Oh.
It was obvious that there was a real bad thunderstorm going on at the same time. But the knocking began again, and it was really, really heavy, and then it was sort of on the windows of the house, etc., and seemed to sort of be going all around the house, you know, as if there were like dozens and dozens of people all sort of standing, sort of knocking, you know, on the doors and the windows. Well, my husband, you know, I mean, obviously we were all very frightened about
this. Did you go outside to see what was going on with the knocking and who was doing this knocking?
Well, again, if you can understand our situation, that the house that we lived in was at the end of a country lane, but there were no other properties nearby, so we had no near neighbors. Sorry?
No, I was just commenting. Yeah, so there wasn't anyone out there, or did you check outside to see if there was a prowler out there?
Well, as I said, we did try, but as I say, this knocking, it sounded like, as I say, it would have been like, you know, a good sort of dozen people doing this. That's the impression that we got. So of course we felt that we were safer inside the house. And then what were Jason's sort of strange, you know, strange things he was coming out with? My husband tried to phone for the police, but each time he tried, the phone just would not work. So, of course, he just sort of threw it in disgust. And then suddenly Jason stopped talking. And the second that he stopped, the banging stopped. All the noise just subsided completely. And then he just suddenly got up from the couch and started walking towards the front door. And, of course, you know, my husband just put his hand on his shoulder and just said to him, you know, where do you think you're going, son? It's pouring down. You know, you're going to get soaked. And without even looking at my husband or any of us, he just said, I have to go. They're waiting for me. And then tried to continue to walk towards the door.
Oh, my God. That must have been terrifying for a four-year-old. My Lord. So he wasn't taken at that moment, as I take it.
That's right. No, he wasn't. But obviously, you know, in an effort to stop him from opening the front door, because obviously we were now, you know, the three of us, myself, Paul, and my mum, were absolutely terrified of, you know, what we might find outside. You know, my husband tried to restrain him, yet the more he sort of tried to hold on to him, the more Jason struggled. And then, of course, the knocking all began again and started getting really, really sort of, you know, violent in intensity. And, you know, sort of, I suppose out of desperation, you know, my husband was sort of like holding Jason tight, you know, and saying, oh, you know, for God's sake, what's going on? You know, come back to us, son. And then, you know, Jason started blinking, you know, as if he was sort of coming out of this trance-like state. And, of course, the more he blinked, you know, in other words, the more he seemed to be coming around, the more the quieter the noise got, you know, until the knocking had receded completely. But by the time he was Jason again, you know, by the time he was wide awake, it was completely quiet.
Now, that was the first of many odd experiences. We only have, in terms of our interview, and I want to open up our phone lines, too, for our listeners. We only have about 15-20 minutes left, and so if you could abbreviate these experiences and give us some other examples of times when you know that Jason was taken because he was missing from the house and there were marks on him, and he's had these experiences all his life and was quite traumatized by them. And I have absolutely no experience with alien abduction and find it very terrifying, but this past month, another friend, Terry Huddleman, had stepped in for me last week, and she took the show and talked about this very experience where apparently her daughter feels that she had this experience and was in sort of a dream state, whereupon she feels quite certain that her pregnancy was terminated by them. And she had a weird dream about it, and she told everyone she knew, and they all had the same dream. So, I wonder if you could go into just a couple examples of these experiences that Jason has had as he grew up and give us some detail, but don't go too long because we want to just give an overview of his experiences and convey this to our audience. And I want to open up our toll-free line at 877-876-5227 in the USA. And if you'd like to call in from Canada, you may dial 888-810-8322. So if you could give us a few more, you know, just maybe one other example or two other examples of these experiences that he had growing up.
Yes, of course. Just to give you a brief overview, there were times when we would actually find him missing from the house, even though the house was locked from the inside. We have two very large dogs, which would obviously raise the alarm if there was anything going on. But once we actually found him inside a locked shed. And, you know, there was no way that he could have gotten there, but obviously, you know, that there he was. I would also say that it actually took us as parents 12 years to actually, you know, get to the point where we actually believed what he'd been saying, you know, for all those years, where we could actually, you know, finally believe his story. But, you know, during that time, he would explain his experiences, he would explain his abductions. And he would say that he would be wide awake, unable to sleep, in the early hours of the morning. And then he said he would suddenly feel paralyzed, but able to use his eyes. He could move his eyes, but nothing else.
Oh, my.
Then he said he would see some small, like, gray beings, which would suddenly be in his room. And then he said that there was always a taller gray being with them. And he said then they would, his next recollection was of being in, well, when he was young, he used to believe he was in a hospital because it was very dark, very cold, but lots and lots of light. And he would feel that he was on some sort of operating table.
Yes, I've heard that before from other guests on my show, that they feel as though they're being examined. And I covered that earlier. But so he feels a connection with these grays then, doesn't he?
Yes, yes, he does. And as I said, for many years, he was absolutely terrified.
Oh, sure. Yeah, understandably. Now, you know, the guest I had on last week talked about in one of her messages that, and she works with the angels too, and she kind of said it out, and I thought this was worthy of consideration. You know, someone that comes to you in the middle of the night and takes you from your bed and paralyzes you and does tests on you, I mean, how could any of that be good? How could any of that be of God? What is going on here as far as what you've been able to determine, and how is that? How are they, these aliens, you know, if they are doing this, how is that helping and advancing the cause of humanity? I mean, Jason's certainly psychic. He's certainly a gifted individual. He's got a very unique take on this. And I couldn't get Jason on the show. I wanted him to contribute his take on this. But I know, as his mom, you've got some answers that you've come up with over the years, shall we say.
Yes, yes, I have. Basically, Jason's, now that he's an adult, he's actually explained to us that he is actually a walk-in, in so much as when, you know, when the baby was born, that the baby should have been stillborn. And he said at that moment he was able to walk into the body, but he said it's something that he chose to do. He wanted to experience what it was like to be human, and he wanted to start from the very beginning. He said this is why he was so terrified all the time of his early abductions, because he was obviously, he grew up with the same social upbringing, the same values that we obviously, you know, instilled in him.
Yeah.
So hence, you know, this is why he was so terrified. But he said that it wasn't until we started actually being able to believe him that he then started to I suppose calm down a little bit and started to listen to his abductors, if you like, and started to learn, and then started to realize that he was actually being awakened by them at his request to the fact of who he truly is. And this is in fact Jason.
Mm-hmm. So he points out in the book some amazing information, and it's in that chapter that you talk about that it was your turn, and you're talking about your experience, a terrifying experience, when you were awakened in the middle of the night by some beings, and you felt that these were not grays but reptilians. So I thought the description in that was just terrifying. I mean, thankfully, I've never had any of these experiences and don't want to. You know, I mean, I just don't feel like, you know, for many years I didn't believe in this, but over the years of working with spirit, I've come to acknowledge that there are many star systems out there with many beings out there. Some of them are ill-intended and malevolent, and some of them, I believe, are very benevolent. But apparently you had a turn with this experience and met up with some not-so-benevolent beings, and I thought your description of them was just amazing. What was this all about?
Well, as you so rightly say, basically, I remember being working in the night. It was one of those situations where we knew that something was going to occur. You know, we tend to get some signs, you know, that we know something's going to happen. I awoke, and I clearly saw, very, very tall reptilian-like beings, you know, very, very scaly.
Say reptilian, they looked like it, what we would think of as a reptile.
Yes, yes, basically. They were like a grayish brown in color, but with a very, very heavy physique. They were human-like in shape, but clearly, you know, that they weren't covered in skin, but rather sort of scales. I noticed from the one that I saw that his toes were almost as long as his fingers. And he had long fingers, but with almost like curved nails or claws on the end. But his eyes were very reminiscent of a crocodile, you know, the way they sort of blink, and you've got the, you know, the
kind of on either side
the
of the face. Kind of on either
Sorry?
Side of the face, were they kind of wrapping around the skull more?
Yes, mm-hmm. they were, but a very, very sort of flat face. But he didn't seem to have a nose at all, but sort of like a wide ridge. Which I obviously took to be the nostrils, etc. But his appearance was absolutely abhorrent.
Come to understand this? I mean, how did you cope with this? How did you get away from them?
Well, it was almost like I just thought, recalled in horror. I remember I was standing at the top of the stairs. And it was almost as if it was in a dream state, but at the same time, it was very real. Mm-hmm. And then I heard Jason's voice saying to me, because I could see into my bedroom, and I could see there was a shape in the bed. And I could hear Jason's voice very clearly saying to me, "Mom, wake up. You have to wake up." Of course, then, you know, obviously, I must have heeded his words, because the next recollection was of trying to force myself to wake up, which was
uh-huh.
really, really hard.
Let me ask you this. Was this a telepathic voice from Jason that you heard?
Or yes, it was.
His spirit was protecting you, even though he was sound asleep in the other room. But, I mean, was there a physical sensation that these beings touched you or took you, or what happened?
Well, there was a very, very physical sensation to accompany it, because I remember when I did wake, I remember that my bed covers weren't on me. They were on the floor. The pillows were everywhere. And there was this awful smell of, like a mint smell. You know, like a mint plant when it's still in the earth. It was that sort of smell.
Yeah, I like the smell of mint, but that I wouldn't like the experience you had. So,
oh, no.
Were these beings... sometimes, you know, in my work with spirit, you know, things can kind of coalesce from other realms and
mm-hmm.
give you sort of an illusion of a shape. But you say that this was a physical presence that was touchable, that was physical, tangible, not an imagining, not a dream. And somehow, too bad you didn't have a camera for that one, you know?
Oh, yeah. I don't think I would have thought of a camera.
Yeah. So, now, I thought what was even more interesting, and this leads me to the kind of the theme of this, is that Jason gave you some incredible insight about these beings and how it's all, you know, how they are, the reptilians are different from the grays, and he was talking about the Elohim and the Anuaki. This is all just really strange, but if you can give us, impart some of Jason's wisdom, because I think he does have some insights here on what the purpose of all this is. And by the way, I want to mention to our listeners, too, if you're thinking this is just too far out for you and you can't accept it, at least look at the book, read the reviews on the webpage of the publisher, which is realityentertainment.com, with a hyphen between reality and entertainment. And the other thing I want to also point out to our viewers is that this is no joke, and our government, the U.S. government and other governments, have been in cahoots with these beings since the Roswell crash. And if you want more corroborative evidence, I really suggest you visit a website called ProjectCamelot.com, where you can hear interviews from people who are former employees or current employees of the government and hear all about what they're doing with the work with the grays. So this is a true thing, and I'm not asking anyone to believe this. I'm asking you to simply keep an open mind as Anne continues with her journey. And remember that everyone has their own truth to share, and that we on the peaceful planet do not discriminate against those that may have a different point of view than yours. So I just wanted to put that out there, because some of this is pretty amazing stuff. So what were some of Jason's viewpoints about these these various creatures that inhabit various other solar systems, and why the connection that he has with the Greys, and what is the function of the reptilians, and how does it all make sense?
Right. He explained to us that just as it is on this planet, there are good people and there are bad people. He said it's no different out there. Obviously you're going to get the good beings and the bad beings. It's the same all over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He said that these reptilians were obviously some of the bad guys. He's also explained to me that when he talks about the Elohim, he's explained to us that the human race began as a genetic experiment. And that, or as he puts it, that we've been redesigned about 7 times now. And he says that each time, after each creation, we would advance technologically and achieve wonderful things, yet each time we will blow it, quite literally. And then we would be redesigned again and then set to populate the planet once again.
Yes, well, as in the case of Atlantis, it's my understanding that it was in Atlantis when these genetic mixtures began to occur, and that in Lemuria, which was an earlier paradise, people were, the land of Mu or Lemuria was referenced in the Bible as the Garden of Eden, but then mm-hmm. from there, apparently people began migrating to Atlantis, and there was some genetic mixing, and that is when the division of the sexes took place, according to Shirley McLean's great book, The Camino. So I want to recommend that book, too, to all of our listeners. But what does Jason say about this genetic mixing and the role of the Anuakai or the Elohim? I think of the Elohim as separate from the Anuakai, and I'm curious what his perceptions are about all this, and how did he come by this knowledge anyway?
Well, believe it or believe it not, he tells us that he comes by his knowledge through his sense of actually being, being around for so many years. He says that he's been here in one form or another for many, many hundreds of years. Maybe not on this planet, but elsewhere in the universe.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people came from other star systems. I do believe that. And
mm-hmm.
it seems as though Jason has an extraordinary psychic gift, and he seems to have gotten some of this information from the group that he identifies with, the Greys. When we're talking Greys, are we talking Zeta Reticulon? Is that the star system that they come from?
Oh, right. He doesn't really get into, where beings come from. I have asked him before, and he just looks at me and says, why is it important for you to know that? He said, you probably wouldn't understand any of it anyway. He said, just suffice it to say that, that they are here. It's like the star children, that he said that they are here. They're here to help you.
Right. Well, there are a lot of star children. I'm a firm believer in the indigo phenomenon and in the crystal phenomenon. And I believe that these kids are coming in from the stars. But it's possible, too, that we ourselves have origins in the stars and that all of us just didn't get here by accident, that there were some high-level decisions made on a cosmic level that account for the creation of man, so-called. So it's not exactly all as it's written in the Bible, but getting back to the relationship of the genetic engineering, he feels that the Anuakai, who come from the planet, my understanding, they come from Anu, which is an offshoot planet that ended up in our solar orbit through the star system Sirius, and that a lot of people on Earth are waking up to their star origins, feel that they may have come from Pleiades, Sirius, and other systems. And so how does that fit in with the Anu, the Anuakai?
It's from what I understand from Jason, when I've spoken to him before about extraterrestrials, he's actually said to me, define extraterrestrial. And I've said to him, well, people or beings that don't come from here. And he's just looked at me and grinned and said, but Mum, he said, there's no one amongst you that comes from here.
No.
He said, because he said, you've got to understand that everything is energy, he said, and we're all spirit. He said, and in that form, we can choose to go anywhere. He said, we're only human because that is the skin that we choose to wear. He said, it's not actually us. It's, you know, it's just how we are.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as a channel and everything, I work with Archangel Michael as well, and I've also channeled in messages from Ra and the Elohim, which are a soul group. Ra is commonly thought of as the Egyptian sun god, but in fact, it's a soul energy or group that both David Wilcock and Carla Rueckert work with, and it's a source of great wisdom and love that's been guiding our planet. And they confirm the truth of this message that we are of extraterrestrial origin, and that that there were various cultures that Earth is a living experiment, and basically what happened is that all these different races that couldn't ascend were put on Earth together with the thought that eventually everyone with all these differences in our races and so on would all learn to get along like one big happy family. Ha ha. This has not occurred, you know.
No.
So that right now we seem to be getting lots of people telling these stories, fantastic as they may sound, about these alien abductions. A lot of people have seen ships in the sky. I know I've seen that many times. You know, I would be terrified if I had to go through what you've been through. And I have to say, you know, what's the point in these beings coming in and paralyzing people in the middle of the night and coming in and taking, you know, your children from you? I mean, you even talk about in the book this experience that you feel you had a pregnancy and lost it due to them. I mean, so I'm thinking, like, well, what is their intention, these grays? What are they trying to do? Are they trying to get at our genetic makeup somehow and test us that way?
Yes, there are. I've heard quite a few theories about all of this sort of thing. One of them being that they can't reproduce themselves, which is where the question of hybrids come in.
Yeah.
But yeah, as I said, that there are a lot of races out there. You know, the ones that Jason associates with, you know, are the greys specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But also there are like a very human looking group that he, you know, he's with also.
Would that be the Anuaki, the human looking group?
Yes, it would.
I've heard that they're very human looking. Yes, and that would make sense if they were the Elohim and the originators, or some of the ones that were very advanced. We're talking people that are more advanced, light years beyond our level of advancement. Correct.
Oh, yes, totally.
Yeah.
Yes,
when they visit Earth, do you believe they're actually coming through a kind of a wormhole, that they're not really coming on ships per se, but they're coming maybe on ships, but those ships travel through what Einstein would call a wormhole, that this is something in a matrix that is beyond our concept of time and space, correct?
Yes, totally.
Yeah.
Totally correct.
And apparently they're very psychic, too, because they can somehow put people into a trance, make them, render them motionless, and do what they will, and steal people out of their sleep. I mean, to me, this is horrifying, and it doesn't seem godly. There's something, I mean, you know, I'm of the light. I work with the angels. You know, I kind of have, there's a part of this that says this is evil, that they shouldn't be messing with human beings. Isn't it true, and I've heard through these interviews that I've watched on ProjectCamelot.com, and I want to refer all of our listeners to that website. It's fantastic that our government wrote a contract with these greys and allowed them to come in and experiment on human beings in exchange for reverse technology, for their alien technology. Do you believe that to be true?
Yes, I totally believe that to be true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I believe that some of the greys that abduct people and perform these experiments, etc. You know, I don't believe that they're doing it for you know, anybody's benefit except their own.
Yeah, exactly. So they seem to be coming from selfish motive rather than from the highest motive, which makes me sort of question, what's all the enlightenment? What have they got to share with us? I think we need to protect ourselves from these kinds of things. and be more open and frank about it. But I did hear on a recent interview, and this was dated 2006 by a Dan Burrish, who has a wonderful interview on Project Camelot, that the government, and he's a U.S. person, that the government is no longer allowing these abductions to take place. And from your personal experience with Jason and yourself, do you find that to be true, that they have ceased?
I suppose, yes, that they do seem to have ceased. But there, right. There again, as I say, although he was, or we both have been abducted, it's not always been by the same beings.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like now, you know, Jason is still abducted, but it's by choice. You know, he's asked to go.
I think so.
Rather
he still
than
has these nightly visitors even now, and it's something that he has come to regard them as friends, correct?
That is correct.
And these are still against his will, still in his sleep, and still leaving marks on his body?
No. As I say, it's got to the point where he sees them and treats them as equals.
I see.
You know, for instance, he always knows when they're coming, when an abduction is going to occur. But he now has the power to say no, it's not convenient now. And they will always say to him, okay, that's fine. So he sort of progressed to, you know, to that sort of position.
So he's in psychic communication with these folks as well. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I want to get to something that's really unusual in your book. I mean, there's so many of these detailed accounts that to my curious mind seem unbelievable, but I'm not doubting your word. I believe that you are an honest person with your truth to share, and I think it's fascinating. We want to refer our readers to your book, Walking Between Worlds, Belonging to None, by Ann Andrews. It's a riveting account of her experiences with her son, Jason. And again, remember, bear in mind, listening audience, that it took her 12 years to accept the weirdness of this. So if you're rolling your eyes thinking this is all too weird and it's somebody's sci-fi fiction, I'd say wake up and read the book. Really take a look at it, read the reviews, and also check out ProjectCamelot.com and then decide. Now, back to this weird experience that you had a dream, and Jason had the same dream. You were gathered together watching a screen film, and in the film, the Earth blows up. What is it that the aliens are trying to warn us about? What is coming, and does this fit in with anyone's idea of Earth changes and possibly ascension? Because I have information from the highest sources that these Earth changes are going to continue, and that there are going to be these unbelievable things coming along. I don't want to say disasters, because I believe that all of us as a human race are heading toward what we understand to be ascension. But what is the significance in your terms of this dream that you both had, and how does that connect with the alien experience?
Right. I believe it was a warning. As Jason always says, nothing is ever written in stone. Everything can be changed. But I firmly believe that was a warning of things, you know, that could come. You know, if we don't sort of start waking up and realizing exactly what we're doing to the planet, what we're doing to the Earth herself, you know, and we don't start sort of trying to get along with each other, you know, we need to sort of, you know, get back that thing that we all once had. You know, we need to get back that sort of one consciousness, you know, sort of the connection,
the oneness,
to each other.
Yeah, and that's one thing I want to stress. I agree with you. We as humanity are confronting unparalleled challenges to our environment, unparalleled possibilities of war and nuclear annihilation, and unparalleled religious strife and racial strife, as evidenced in my work in the Middle East with Princess Diana and all of that. She talks about that every week, how we have to live in oneness with one another, and we have to get over these religious and ethnic differences. And certainly if we are facing, these visitations from other worlds, either they're trying to warn us or some of them are trying to capitalize on the existing chaos and confusion to their own end. And we as a human race need to come to a sense of unity amongst one another. After all, we are facing all these different dangers. And so it seems to me that they, some of them, the more benevolent ones, are trying to warn us. Anne, are you there?
Yes. Oh, you went quiet for a moment.
Yeah, you did too. And it seems as though we need to acknowledge the truth of these visitations and these off-planet entities and deal with them in a unified way as a unified human consciousness. And that if we don't get our act together, that you know, divided we fall, more or less, as the saying goes.
Hello?
Yes, I was just wondering what your thoughts were about that and that vision that you were given so many years ago. I do think it was a warning, and I do think that that unity consciousness must be allowed to happen. Now, let me see how much time we have here, Anne. Oh, my goodness. We are right about at time. I want you to mention your book again, your website, and anything else that you would like to say to us in terms of your parting words for the end of the show. We've already come to the end of the show.
Okay. Right. My book is called Walking Between Worlds, Belonging to None. It's available from Reality Press, which is part of Reality Entertainment. It's also available on Amazon.com. I suppose as a last thing I would like to say is, as I said in the beginning, it took us as a family 12 years to finally accept what our young son was telling us and believe him. And all I would like to say is that, you know, if there are people out there, children out there who are having these horrendous things happening, you know, please just don't take as long as we did. Just listen and love them and be there for them.
And be there for them, love them, and maybe get them some help. And I want to say it's been a blessing to have you and your book on the show, and it is a fascinating read. I want to give the readers your website again at www.reality-entertainment.com, which is her publisher's website, and the book is Walking Between Worlds. And I want to also refer our listeners to my website at www.dianaspeakstotheworld. And there you can read Diana's powerful messages of peace and diplomacy on the site index. You can also sign up for a wonderful reading with Archangel Michael. And I thank you all for listening to The Peaceful Planet. And as a tribute to our special guest, Anne Andrews, today, we're going to close out with a wonderful song that's been channeled in by John Lennon through Bob Murray, and it's titled Remarkable Nebulae. In honor of all the star systems out there, we know they're out there. Many blessings to all of you. Thank you for joining us, Anne, and thank you to our listeners for joining us. Join us again next week on The Peaceful Planet. This is your show host, Marcia McMahon, and I say many blessings to all.